My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast. Hello, and welcome to something of an EDP F1 podcast bonus, if you will. Now, as you may or may not know, Norfolk boy done good Jake Humphrey will be leaving his role as anchor of the BBC's F1 coverage at the end of this season and after 4 years in the job. He's also written a book on his time in the sport and alongside David Coulthard and Eddie Jordan called The Inside Track, which if you are lucky enough to grab a copy of it, as it seems they seem to be few and far between at the moment, I'm sure it would make the perfect Christmas present. Anyway, between the Abu Dhabi and USA Grand Prix, Jake was around the country doing book signings and he popped into Norwich to do one as well, a very popular one too. I managed to grab a few words with Jake on his Formula One career past, his highlights and the things coming up. Here is that chat. I hope you enjoy it.
Michael, sorry we haven't got long. How are you?
Yeah, no problem at all. Jake, I'm very well. Thank you very much. Are you good?
Good. Yeah, very good, thanks.
You must be a busy man at the moment.
I know. It's here, there and everywhere at the moment.
God, it's our own personal tour of the country. How easy was it putting something like this together? A bit of a challenge?
Yeah, it was a huge challenge. I mean, I don't think I'm naturally cut out for writing a book because I'm so used to sort of, you know, using up all my energy by going around and doing mad and daft things. I was sort of forced to spend the entire F1 season this year stuck in my room getting this book written. But I'm really proud of it. I mean, what I like about the book is that I wrote every word myself. And from the day that I got the Formula One job, I remember my wife ringing me up, actually, the day that I got the job, and they released the news that I was the new F1 presenter at 10 a.m. At 10:30, she rang me a flood of tears, telling me that she'd read on the internet that I was going to be rubbish. And when I asked her where she read it, she said on the BBC Sport website. So I really went into this job thinking, blimey, I've got to win over the viewers somehow. And the way I did that was I, you know, used the Twitter to just send pictures and used the blogs. And the whole aim of, you know, the online stuff was to try and take people as close as I could to the job, because I realised that I do a job that thousands of people would love to do, and I still feel like, you know, such a lucky guy to have been given the chance to do it. You know, I'm just this bloke from Norwich who messed up his A-levels and somehow that's ended up with him being on, you know, the BBC's F1 coverage. And the book is very similar, really. I wanted to write something for whether you're a hardcore F1 fan and you watch every race or whether you've never seen a Grand Prix before. There was something for you to learn in this book, and it's stories of the fun and the games of hanging out with David Coulthard and Eddie Jordan, from, you know, the time that I hung out with Fernando Alonso in his pants to the day that I nearly killed Murray Walker, to what it's been like to, you know, crown a few Formula One champions along the way. And it's been quite a journey from Norfolk to the rest of the world, so I wanted to put on paper.
Absolutely, brilliant stuff. I can imagine working with DC and Eddie is going to be unique. Whatever you do in the rest of your career, it's not
absolutely. I mean, a lot of people say that Children's BBC was good because that gave me a good insight into what it'd be like to work with Eddie Jordan. And, you know, they are such a mad couple of guys. But you often forget, when they become your friends, you forget that you're standing there with a man who's won 13 Grand Prix. And often we'd go to a racetrack and David would tell us a story about the time that he raced there or won the race or something amazing happened. And you think, oh my God, I'm really, you know, standing in the presence of a really high-achieving, special person here. And then Eddie, you know, is the sort of the king of the malaprop, you know, getting his words back to front, rewriting the English language as we go. And what I often find is with about 10 seconds until we're on air, he pulls out his earpiece and he asks me, what are you going to ask me? And I tell him the question. And then about 10 seconds later, he pulls his earpiece out again and he says, what am I going to say? And I often have to explain to him, I can't do the questions and the answers, you know, he has to help me out at some point. But it's been a really, really exciting 4 years, and yeah, I hope that it gives people an insight into what my life has been like.
Fantastic. When you took up the job, what was your Formula One knowledge like? I mean, how much have you had to learn over these?
I mean, yeah, my knowledge was okay. I mean, you know, growing up in Norfolk, there's serious grassroots love of motorsport, and obviously Lotus were only down the road, and they had Nigel Mansell and Ayrton Senna driving for them in the era when I was watching. But I remember going for dinner with Steve Ryder before I got the job, and he said to me, look, whatever you know about Formula One, multiply it by 1,000, double it, and you'll still be some way short. And what really sort of got me through was that I'd spent years and years at Children's BBC doing hours of live TV, and I always knew that in terms of the pressure, the live pressure of standing in front of 6 or 7 million people hosting Formula One, I always thought that my time on Children's BBC would help me to deal with the technical element of presenting a TV programme about F1. The only area that I might get caught out was in my knowledge. And so I made a concerted effort to buy autobiographies and just about every Formula One book you can imagine, DVDs, and I just immersed myself in the sport for the 6 months before the job began. Because when you're a presenter on something like this, you know, you're following in the footsteps of Murray Walker or Des Lynam. You know, you've got to live up to the standard that's been set before you. And I think that brings with it such a responsibility. You can't let people down. It's important that you do justice to the sport.
Absolutely. Has it got harder over the 4 years with the length of the calendar and things like that? I mean, what was it, 20 races this year, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has got really tough, actually. You know, we're in a situation now where Formula One has to follow the money, and Bernie told me actually in just an interview last week that there may well be less European races in years to come. And there's so few as there are now, because if you look at the recent races to come onto the calendar, Singapore, Abu Dhabi, Bahrain, India, you know, they're all either emerging nations or they're mega rich places. And the sport now realises the importance of conquering North America, so we're going back to Austin this year and New York as well next year, and then China comes on the calendar. And it was a really, really tough decision to decide that I needed to walk away from Formula One, and it was a combination of things, really. You know, 4 years is a long time to be on the road all the time, and at the same time a job offer came in from BT to do Premier League football, and I think it's the greatest football in the world, and they've got, you know, first pick Premier League games, so it's a chance to be a Premier League football presenter, which is a rare opportunity and a chance I didn't really want to say no to. And then on top of all of that, you know, Harriet and I's first baby is due in March, and so I wanted to be around for that. So it's a combination of things really that created the perfect storm, and in some ways the book is kind of a full stop and a farewell on that time.
Fantastic stuff. It's a simplistic question and there's probably not an answer, but do you have a highlight? Is there one abiding memory that will be the first?
Yeah, I think it has to be the first time that we crowned Jenson Button as the Formula One world champion. And we were in the garage together and he was brought in, and we weren't told whether we'd get an interview with him in the weeks leading up to being crowned world champion, because the team didn't want to jinx it. And then to stand there and to be so close to him and to see the 1,000-yard stare and to smell the champagne on his overalls, and to be the first person to be able to speak to someone that's achieved what they'd wanted since they were, you know, 8 years of age, was a remarkable experience. And actually the abiding memory for that evening isn't necessarily even doing the interview with him, it's sitting on the coach going back to the airport at about 1 o'clock in the morning, and it was the end of my first season. I remember sitting there thinking, you've done all right here. You know, when you consider the negativity at the start and the nerves and, you know, the lack of knowledge by comparison to someone like Murray Walker and the pressure of doing live TV week in, week out, you know, it felt good. I felt like I'd done myself justice, which I think is all you can do.
Absolutely. Good lad. Fantastic. I've got my opinion on this, but I want yours. If Vettel does the job this year, which, you know, looks fairly likely, is it best of the three titles?
Yeah, it's definitely Sebastian Vettel's best achievement of the three, and I think it's because he has had to drive around a bad car at times. You know, last year was complete domination because the car was amazing. The year before that, he hadn't really led the title until the last race, and he drove okay. Whereas this year, when he's needed to, he's put the car on pole, and he's led the races, and he's won the Grand Prix. When he's had to fight through adversity, such as when he got demoted to the back of the grid in the last race and still ended up on the podium, and above all that, to beat the five other world champions on the grid. You know, there's more world champions on the grid than we've ever had before. To beat them all, that's how you judge how well someone's done. It's by the people they've beaten. And Seb has done exactly what he needed to do, and he now joins an elite club. If he wins his third world championship, it's him, Fangio and Schumacher, as the men have done a hat-trick of world titles. It's not a bad company to keep.
Not bad, is it? Gosh, not bad. Is there anything, you've got two races, so is there anything you've still got to do? Is there like a list of things to tick off before you
win done? No, I have to say I don't feel there's any unfinished business leaving Formula One. I think the main thing is just to sort of thank the audience for their support over the last 4 years, because without them, you know, being positive about our Formula One coverage, it wouldn't have been anything like as much fun. And my only other aim is to try and get a little bit of memorabilia because when I'm 65 years old and I'm looking decrepit and I tell my kids, once your dad used to be in Formula One walking up and down the pit lane interviewing the drivers, they won't believe a word I say. So if I've got a couple of nice little things in my study to remember my time in Formula One, I can show them those things and let them know that once their dad did all right for himself.
Do you know who's taking over from you yet? Do you know?
No, the decision's not been made yet, actually. I mean, there's obviously Lee McKenzie, who's the pit lane reporter, who's in situ at the moment, but it remains to be seen whether they go with her or give it to an outsider. I know that Chris Evans has been desperately keen on the job, and I think he's been writing in his column every Sunday how much he'd love to do it, and that just reminds me how important this job is. You know, I'm walking away from a job that Chris Evans is desperate to land, so it feels a bit strange, really.
Yeah, just a bit, I can imagine that. After the two races, are you having a bit of time off? Obviously, you've got a lot going on at home as well.
I've not too much time off, actually. I've got, you know, a few other little bits and pieces, but I'm looking forward to Christmas. I'm back home in Norwich for Christmas this year, and I've not been home in Norwich for Christmas for 4 or 5 years, so it will be a lovely traditional Christmas lunch with all of my family, which will be wonderful. I look forward to that.
Fantastic. Jake, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
No worries, pal. Nice to chat, and thanks very much.